Good morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Darim is Nun Vav. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is one of the definitions of Lupin, Gabriela Bashmuel. Continuation of the discussion in the Gemara about what is included within a neder. Hanoder ben Abayi, it's a person makes a neder that he's not going to go into somebody's house. Mutar b'aliyah, so he can go into the second floor. Okay, their houses weren't constructed exactly the same way our houses were constructed. That's for sure true. What exactly the difference is? Well, notably, one major difference is that their roofs were not sloped, but rather the roofs were flat. And sometimes those roofs served as a second floor. Sometimes there was an actual second floor. And sometimes the roofs themselves served as the second floor. The word Aliyah over here, not perfectly clear what exactly it means. Certainly it does not mean the first floor. It means something on the second floor. So either it could be the roof itself or it could be the second floor. Either way, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, which in a moment we'll see is Rabbi Meir, because it actually says that. So the Tanakhama of our Mishnah says that when a person makes a neder against not going into somebody's house, so Mutar b'Aliyah, so he can go onto the second floor according to Rabbi Meir. V'chachamim omrim, Aliyah b'chala abayis, and the Chachamim say no, that the Aliyah is considered part and parcel of the house. And so therefore, neder on the house also will include within it the Aliyah as well. I know the Aliyah mutar b'bayis. However, let's go in the other direction. Let's say I make a neder against the Aliyah. So the Aliyah, which again is like the second floor, it's not like the main part of the house. So if I make a neder just against the Aliyah, so that does not include the main part of the house, and that's divrei hakol, that's according to everybody. So certainly the idea that we get from the Mishnah is that the Aliyah is a subcategory of the house. That's for sure true. What's subject to debate is if I make a neder against the house, is the Aliyah included? That's open to a debate between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Rav Meir says it's not part of the house, and the Chachamim says it is. But going the other direction, everyone's in agreement. In other words, if I made a neder against the Aliyah, because it's a subsection of the house, so therefore that's a very specific neder, and as we've been discussing time and again, when you make a specific neder, it doesn't include the general. The general includes a specific, but the specific certainly doesn't include the general. So making a neder against the Aliyah is not going to include the main component of the house. Good. That's the idea communicated in the Mishnah. Man Tana Bevais. So we are thrown into a middle of a discussion as we start with the Gemara, and that is, who's the author of the following Braisa? There's a Braisa that we're going to learn regarding Nigei Batim. So just as a brief introduction, we know that when it comes to Tsaras, Tsaras can affect one of three things. It could either affect us personally, meaning our physical body, the Tsaras will actually afflict our skin. Two, the Tsaras can afflict our clothing. And three, the Tsaras can afflict our houses. So a person, clothing, houses, three different parashios that are found throughout the course of Tazria Mitzora in terms of what exactly can be affected through Tsaras. This Braisa obviously is talking about the Tsaras that affects a house, Tana. And the Braisa goes as follows. Bibbeis, l'rabos asiyatia. So Bibbeis, l'rabos asaliya. So it includes the Yitzia. Yitzia is some sort of... I'm sorry, I forgot English. Balcony, thank you. So the Yitzia is like kind of like the balcony, and the second base is coming to include the Aliyah. So in other words, there are ribuim, there are inclusions. The extra wording of the word base is coming to include both the balcony and also the second floor. I'm Rav Chista, Rabbi Meir. So Rav Chista says, okay, I know who the author of that Mishnah is. That Mishnah, or that Braisa, that needs a special drasha to come and to include the second floor, that must be going like the Chachami, because the Ira, I'm sorry, that must be going like Rabbi Meir. The Ira, Banan Hamir, Rabbanan Aliyah, Bechlal Habayas, Salam Alikra, Bebeis L'Ribuye. Because think about it, what do we learn in our Mishnah? That according to the Chachamim, when I say the word bias and I make a neder against a bias, that immediately includes already the second floor. So according to the Chachamim, the second floor is already inclusive in the house. So that means then that in the world of Saras, I know that if I have a nega, if I have an affliction on the second floor, according to the Chachamim, I don't need a special drasha. The second floor is considered part of the house. So the only person that I need a drasha for is only going to be according to Rabbi Meir, not according to the Chachamim. Okay, that's so. It seems like that Bryce is going like Rabbi Meir, not like the Chachamim. Now you know how the Gemara operates. The Gemara we could just leave the discussion off like this, but the Gemara doesn't want to pigeonhole the Bryce to be going just like the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Therefore, the Gemara continues. Abaye Amar Afilu Tim Rabbanan. No, you can even say that the author of that Bryce is going like the Chachamim. So Bayikra. Even according to the Chachamim in the pasuk, because think about it. We're talking about Nigei Batim. We're talking about the Saras afflictions that affect a house. And the Torah over there says, Bebeis Eretz Achuzaschem. When the Torah talks about houses, the Torah talks about the houses that are connected to the ground. So the Havamina would have been first floor. Because only the part of the house that is directly connected to the ground. Salkadaschem, the Gemara goes on to explain. Bebeis Eretz Achuzaschem Ksiv, Demechaber Ba'ara Shmei Bayis. Aliyah, halom amechaber ba'ara. So that's the havamina, that only the part of the house that's physically connected to the ground, only that part of the house is subject to tzaras. But the second floor, which is not physically connected to the ground, so I might have thought that it's not that it won't be subject to the rules of tzaras, meaning that even if I did find tzaras on the second floor, the house would not be considered menuga, would not be considered like the house is has tzaras. So that's the chiddush. The chiddush is no, that even the second floor as well, even though it's not directly connected to the floor. So we can even explain the Brisa, we'll be going like the Chachamim. All right, period. Ad kan. The Gemara now continues. Come on, Azla Hadama Rav Huna Barchia Mishmei de Ula. The following halacha was taught in the name of Ula. Bais Bebeisi. Okay, so what do? You list your house for sale, and kind of hard to, you know, in modern terminology, I guess you put it on the listing, but no picture. No, you can't see it on Google Earth. In other words, all you have in the listing is buys, but they see. So that the seller is now writing up a contract. The buyer's buying it sight unseen, and the way the transaction is going, he's saying buys, but they see. So ani mocher lach. So I'm telling you now. The words translate literally as a house within my house. Okay, buys bevesi, and so now you know how generally whenever the Gemara deals with a transaction issue, so the question is, what is the normal usage of that language? How is this language normally understood between buyer and seller? And the question then becomes, what is considered an acceptable satisfaction of this transaction, and what is considered unacceptable? If it's unacceptable, it's called mekachtos. It's called a voided sale, and therefore it's no good. So when the seller promotes that he's selling buys bevesi, so what can he now sell and it still be viewed and termed an acceptable transaction? So buys bevesi and mochalach marehu aliyah. So what he can do is he can show him the second floor. Okay? And in other words, I know that's a funny transaction. I can't imagine that the buyer is going to be super excited that now he's a proud owner of a second floor. How is he going to get to that second floor? What's the access point he's going to get to it? Okay, those are all going to be issues. But what he did agree to, in other words, he agreed to the terms of the sale. The terms of the sale were buys by VC, a house within my house. And so therefore, the seller can reasonably say, yes, that's what I meant. I meant the second floor. Now, time adamale buys by VC animochalach. So the Gemara now makes a diuk. What was stated? Buys by VC. Ava buyestam inamare aliyah. So, but if he just simply sold him the bias, so then he doesn't show him the second floor. Meaning, it sounds like the second floor is not included within the bias, Lema Rabbi Meirhi. And so therefore, it sounds like that the author of this opinion, now again, we left the world of Nadarm, we went into the world of Kenyan, of transaction. But here, however, it's a very fair comparison. Because remember, what's the guiding rule behind Nadarm? Halach Achaloshim Nei Adam. We follow what is considered acceptable language between people. When we talk about kinyanim, when we talk about transaction, it's the same guiding principle. Meaning that, how do I know that I didn't cheat you? Because this is acceptable usage of language. And so therefore, when I say a house, and you understood house, so if we have an acceptable usage of language, so therefore it's not a mekachtos, it's not a voided transaction. So it's a very fair comparison. So the Gemara says, when he said bais bevesi, he meant the second floor. And it sounds like had he just said the word bais, it would have meant first floor, not second floor. And if all this is true, now there's a lot of speculation that just occurred, but if all this is true, it sounds like then that we're going like Rabbi Meir, not like the Chachamim. Because remember, according to Rabbi Meir, if I make an edor against the house, so I can't go in the house, but I can go to the second floor. Because second floor is not included in the house. So it sounds like the author of this opinion is Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says, no. Afilu tem rabbanan mai aliyah mu'ula shebebatim. So the Gemara says, no, you can even be going like the Chachamim. Because the word aliyah could be understood as mu'ula shebebatim, the best of the houses. Meaning aliyah does not have to be taken super literally. It does not necessarily mean that you're showing him the second floor. Aliyah means just simply the best. Me'ula, it's the best. The best of the houses. And therefore, as Ron points out over here, what's the conclusion? V'hachi kamar. Ma'rei aliyah. So I'm sorry. V'hachi kamar. Ma'rei aliyah. Al karcha shel mocher. Dekeim da'amalei bais beveisit sarach livur lo ha'me'ula. What it means, aliyah, does not mean second floor. Aliyah means that I'm selling you a house of my houses, one of my houses, and specifically the best of my houses. That's how the Chachamim show. And when the conclusion was, you have to show them the aliyah, it doesn't mean the second floor. It means that in order to satisfy this transaction, what the seller has to produce now is the best of his houses. Okay, Ad Kan, that is the Gemara's conclusion over here. The Ran takes some time going through the Gemara Menachos. There's a parallel discussion in the Gemara Menachos. The Gemara over there, however, its conclusion is not the same as the conclusion over here. So see the Ran for a discussion of which version do we go with in terms of Nidarim. Okay, anyway. Next discussion coming up in the Gemara, Hanodim and Amita. So let's say I make a neder against the bed. So in other words, I'm not going to sleep in a bed anymore, and for whatever reason, I make a neder that I'm not sleeping in a bed. Muta b'dargash, I'm allowed to sleep in a dargash. A dargash is a type of bed, the likes of which we're going to explain in just a moment. But it's an unusual bed. So despite the fact that I made a neder and I said I'm not going to be sleeping in a bed, but I'm allowed to sleep on the dargash. Div Rabbi Meir, once again, that is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. So you see the consistency within the Mishnayos. The previous Mishnah said that according to Rabbi Meir, the aliyah is not considered part of the house, and the Chachamim disagree. In this Mishnah, similar theme, that according to Rabbi Meir, the dargash is an unusual bed, and it's not considered a neder when I make a neder that I'm not going to sleep in bed. The Chachamim omrim dargish bechlal mita, and the Chachamim say no, that the dargish is considered part of the family of beds, and therefore if I make a neder against sleeping in beds, I can't sleep in the dargish. Once again, we'll explain what the dargish is in just a moment. Now, I know the dargish mutar b'mita. Now let's go in the opposite direction. Let's invert. What if I make a neder against the dargish? So then that does not include beds, because again, like we said in the previous Mishnah, a dargish is a subspecific category of beds. It's a special type of bed. So if I make a neder against the general usage of beds, so I can't use a dargish, according to the Chachamim. But if my neder is against the dargish, which is a sub-specific category of bed, so then that neder is only going to preclude me from the dargish, but it won't preclude me from the bed. Okay, Adkan Divrei HaMishnah, it begs the following question. My dargish, that's the Gemara's first question. It's a very simple question. What are we talking about? What is the dargish? Now, if all this sounds familiar, it should, because this Gemara, almost line for line, is we saw it together in Moed Katan not that long ago. But we get to see it now, again, so good. So if you don't remember it, so it's an excellent form of review. What exactly is a dargish? Amar Ula Arsa Degada. So he describes it, Ula describes it as an Arsa Degada. It's a good luck bed. Okay, you heard me correctly. It's a good luck bed. It's a bed of luck. What in the world does that mean? First of all, the word gad in Hebrew is a reference to luck. Ron quotes the Gemara in Shabbos that describes the word God meaning luck. But I'll give you another source for this. Look at the one of the sons that are born to Yaakov, right? God. So God gedud yigedenu. So if you look at Rashi over there in Chumash, so Rashi over there in Chumash describes God as being good fortune. Actually, Rashi gives a couple of explanations, right? The one of the explanations that when the pasuk describes the birth of God, so if you look at the pesukim, so it's the Torah describes it as bagad. So you can either read it as one word or you can read it as two separate words. If you read it as one word, so Rashi says that the correct understanding is bagad, meaning he was treacherous. Yaakov was treacherous. Because when he had God, so he didn't have God with Leah, but he had it with one of the shvachos. So he was treacherous in the fact that he didn't, that he had a child together with another woman, so to say. Granted, she told him, you know, to have a child with another woman. But okay, that's, you know, some of the built-in ironies of life. So anyway, so that's one pshat. But another pshat is that if you take a look at Rashi, ba'gad meaning God, mean God is good fortune. Ba'gad, you read it, it's two separate words, right? In comes good fortune. So the word God is a reference to good fortune. So the back to our Gemara, Ula describes the bed as arsa degada, a bed of good fortune. Okay, now this is a little bit strange. It's basically for lack of a better term, it's a good luck charm. Now we're not believers in charms. We're not the Torah. In fact, prohibits us from having any type of reliance on any type of good luck charm. So how do you understand it in general? So it's difficult. It's difficult to understand what exactly this means. I will quote for you a rush on today's daf. It is fascinating. It's, you know, this is beyond my pay grade in terms of understanding. But I'll read it, and it's the rush. It's not. I'm not reading from a Kabbalistic source. I'm reading from the rush. Arsa degada. If you can see inside, it really begs you to squint your eyes if you're at a certain age, which I'm getting there. So if you look at the rush, arsa degada mita ha'asui lamazel habay. So the rush writes, it's a bed that's designed for the purposes of providing mazel for the house. Gida bepsachim gad gediv v'sinuk lo. Okay, go quote the Gemara Pesachim. It's actually not the Gemara Pesach. It's a Gemara in Shabbos. Either way. Okay. Anyway, ki shara de atirusa nakir shame. But then the rush goes on to explain. How does the bed work as mazel? So it works like this. There's a ministering angel appointed over Ashiras. And Nakir Shame, his name is Nakir, which means cleanliness. And where's this malach going to visit? The malach is going to visit a clean house. So for those of you who are demanding a clean house, now you have at least a good source in terms of why you should be demanding a clean house. Okay, if in other words, the Malach of Ashiras is present in the house that's clean. Lakach machnis and tamin mita mutzas l'nekiyas. So the rush is great. The rush writes that, you know, to have your house clean at all times, that's, you know, it's very difficult. Right, so what you do is you're not going to have the entire house clean, but you're going to have one bed basically designed as the clean bed, meaning this bed will always be made, never be used, always be tidy and neat, and that way at least you have a means, at least a method of inviting this particular ministering angel over into your house. And so the rush says that's how this bed of good luck is going to work. That's how it serves as a way, as a means of providing mazel and bracha into your home. Okay, or you can keep the whole house clean. Either way. Nobody uses it. It's the bed just simply is there. It's never used. Okay, so Amar Ula Arsa Degada. Okay, so let's now go over what let's put everything together. Let's go back to our Mishnah and let's explain the Mishnah based on Ula's explanation. The Mishnah says that if you make an edder that you're not going to enjoy bed, so you're allowed to use the Arsa Degada. You're allowed to use the bed of good luck, even though, as we just explained, now the bed of good luck means nobody ever uses it. But I guess that's exactly the point. Meaning you're making a neder against normally used beds. This bed is never used, so that your neder is not going to apply to it, according to Rebbe Meir. Which again, it's just so funny. In other words, so now you need a place to sleep, and you made a neder, so you can now sleep on the mazel bed, and now you're going to get yelled at by everybody in the house because you slept on the mazel bed. So anyway, So Amrle Rabban Leula. So how did not? So the Gemara says, okay, but let's consider the following. Okay, we are quoting a Mishnah together in Sanhedrin, and the Mishnah in Sanhedrin describes this is what happens if you have a king who is who's an oval. So how does this Avelis work? Now remember, he's the king, so he has to maintain a certain standard of kavod, even as the king. So when they do the Suda Savra is that first meal when they come home from the funeral, basically give him some, literally, figuratively and emotionally, some strength. So Kishain Maver Nosa, when they do the Suda Savra, Kolam Mesuban Al Aretz, everyone is on the floor, Vuhu Mesiv Al Hadargish. And where does the king sit? So the king sits on this thing called the Dargish. So Kula Shasa Yala Yasev Allahu Yuma Yasev Allah. And now the Gemara is asking a question on Ula. Ula, this really doesn't make any sense. the year round, no one's sitting on this bed. And now, on this one very unusual occasion, the king's going to be sitting down in the bed. So Maskav la Ravina. So Ravina says, yes. Meaning it's not a question. That's just that could just simply be not only a good observation, but absolutely true. Meaning to have our basaviyain. So Ravina says, let me give you a good parallel. Let's talk about meat and wine. Dekula shasi by achavi by loachem. So think about it from the king's perspective. Meat and wine. He's a king. He can have meat and wine anytime he wants. And at his disposal, it's just part of being the king. It's good to be the king. You can have meat and wine at your leisure. Meanwhile, hahu yuma, but that very day, meaning he's an aval right now. And he's having the suda savra. And we know the halacha regarding a suda savra is that you can't provide your own meal. The meal must be provided by others. So hahu yuma anan yavinalei. So on that very day, he cannot produce his own meat and wine. We have to give him meat and wine. So what do you see? You see that when it comes to an avel of a king, things are unusual for him. So the idea that he's sitting on a dargush, what was the question? That's unusual. Answer, okay, that's right, that's unusual. Meaning this is a time in his life where things are going to be unusual. The wine and meat is going to have to be given to him. He can't produce it himself. He can't just simply instruct his servants to make it for him. So same thing with the bed. He sits on a dargish, and we don't normally sit on a dargish. Good, exactly. Elahakasha. The Gemara abandons this line of questioning. The Gemara understands that you're right. Good. It's a very good point. So the Gemara says the following question, however, does bother us. Ditanya, we learned on a brisa. Dargish lohaya kofeu ela zokfo. When it comes to the halacha kfir samita, so once again, let's go over a halacha that we know, but let's review. It's something we don't do in practice nowadays. And that is when a person's an avel, so when he goes back home from the cemetery, so he's to take all of his beds and he's to turn them upside down. Okay, this is the halacha kfir samita. We know that the bed, the idea behind the bed, the Gemara doesn't say this, but this is the standard explanation of a halacha that does sound a little bit strange. But the standard explanation is that the bed is really your image, meaning it's the image of the person. And that now that one of your relatives died, so there's a pachas, there's a diminishment of the human image. And so therefore what you do is you take the bed and you turn the bed over, and it shows a diminishment of the human image. It's been reported to me by many people that that's the idea behind covering the mirrors, which is not mentioned in the Gemara. The Gemara has no mention whatsoever of covering the mirrors, but the idea behind the covering the mirrors, once again, is because it's the diminishment of the human image. You want to preclude, you want to cut down, so to say, on the human image as you are experiencing the loss of a karev of a relative. Good. So this is a minhag that was done back then. So now, go back to a time where everyone turned the beds over, and the Mishnayos and Moed Katan says that every bed needs to be turned over, and what do you do with a dargish? Good. That's the question. So the Braisa tells us, Dargish lohaya kofeyu, you would not turn it over, ela zokfo. But rather what you do is you would just turn it 90 degrees. You would not go the full 180, just 90 degrees. Turn it from the horizontal up to the vertical. V'yamar darsa degadahu. So the Gemara says, now, let's think about what Ula taught us. Ula taught us that this bed is a bed of good luck, which means nobody lies down on this bed. If nobody lies down in this bed, the Gemara is about to teach us, it doesn't need to be turned over at all. The Hatanya, the Gemara quotes a brisa. Hakofe es mitaso, lo mitaso bilvad hu kofe, ela kol mitoshi yesh lo besoch habayis hu kofe. The requirement is to overturn every bed in the house. So, but every bed of the house, every bed in the house, okay, and even the ones that you don't use. I apologize. The other way around. The question's going in the other direction. You should have to turn this bed around. So the Gemara says halo kasha. The Gemara says once again, this also doesn't pose much of a question. So the Gemara says okay. This is not a bed, meaning the dargash, the arsa de God is not considered a bed. You know what it's like? it's like you have a bed, but the usage of the bed is for your utensils. The Tanya, we're on the very top of Nun Vav Amud Beis. We learned in a Brisa, Mitam Yucheres LeKelim Ein Tzarech LeKfosa. If you have a bed that's used only for utensils, but not for any type of sleeping purposes, you don't need to turn it over because it's not a bed. So now, right? This is what I was thinking about earlier. So now what the Gemara is arguing is this Dargash is not considered a bed since it's not used for sleeping at all. So therefore, it's not considered a bed. So the Gemara says, "Ela ikasha akasha." The Gemara says, "Finally, here, look. Here's what really bothers me in terms of the definition that Ula gave. Ula says that basically the dargash is a arsa degada. It's a bed of good luck." And the Gemara posed a number of questions, but right now the Gemara is still defending Ula's answer that it's a bed of good luck. When it comes to a person who is an avel and needs to turn over the bed, this bed does not need to be turned over. But again, the Gemara explained, but I understand that because it's not used for sleeping. Only those beds that are used for sleeping is considered or of this requirement to be turned over. So the Gemara is still, however, is going to poke holes at Ula's explanation. Eli Ikasha Akasha. Three lines down on Vav Amud Beis, the Gemara continues it. Tanya will enter in a Braisa. Rabbi Shimon Gamla Omar Dargash Martir Karvitav Vahuno Felme Elav. When it comes to the Dargash, what are we supposed to do? We untie the loops and the bed falls on its own. Now V'i Dargash Arsa Degadahu. So the Gemara says now, if what you're telling me is that this bed is considered arsa degada, it's a bed that is used for specifically for a good luck bed. So karvita mislei. So the Gemara says, I understand. It has loops, meaning it's got it's tied up. So kiasa ravin amr she'iltilahu me rabban of Rav Tachlifa bar marav shmei. I asked a particular rabbi. His name was Rav Tachlifa, and finally the havishchiach b'shuka desalei. And very often he was by the tanners, by the leather makers. V'amrili my dargash arsa detzala. So the Gemara finally concedes that this is not a good luck bed, not like Ula reported, but rather the Gemara is going to give a different explanation. Arsa detzala, it is a leather bed. Now, let's just explain this a little bit better. Beds nowadays and beds back then are not the same. Okay, we sleep on these mattresses, they are luxurious. Okay, from their standpoint, what we sleep on is just it's absolute royalty. What we sleep on nowadays. Back in the good old days, what you would do is you would take four posts, you would put them together, all right, and then you would do one of two things. So what was usually done is you would basically thread string through the four posts and like a weave, and then you would put some sort of I'd say mattress, but kind of like either sheet or some sort of bedding on top of it, and you would lie down in it, and that was the bed of the good old days. Or another option, which the Gemara here is describing, is that instead of intertwining rope amongst the posts, what you would do is you would have a very long leather sheet, and you would tie that onto the four bed posts, and basically you would lie down now on top of the leather mat, which was tied. What the Gemara now is identifying is that this arsa, the dargash that's being described in our Mishnah. So this is the what I just described. It is the bed with a leather sheet that is tied on the four bedposts. So itmar ezu mita ve'ezu dargash. The Gemara quotes, "What's the bed? What's the dargash?" Amar Avir mi amita misaganosa agaba dargash misaganosa migufo. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Yirmiya that he has a tradition that when it comes to a regular bed, the srug, the weave, is al-gaba, over the bedposts. So in other words, again, it's very simple construction, four bedposts, and then you tie strings, looping it over the bed, over the posts, and dargash masagan osa begufo. And when it comes to the dargash, you actually drill a hole through the bedpost, and you're tying, because again, it's one long leather sheet, and you're tying the straps of the leather sheet through the holes. Mates for the Gemara challenges Kli Eitz Meimasayim Kablam Tumah. This Mishnah over here from the Mishnayos and Kalim describes at what point is the Kli Eitz going to be susceptible to Tumah. Meaning we have a general rule when it comes to Tumas Kalim, and that is that a utensil is only going to be susceptible to Tumah only after it becomes a finished product. And the Mishnayos, excuse me, The Mishnayos over there in Kalim spent a lot of time going over what exactly is considered the end product of various pieces of furniture. So, Hamita v'harisa, when it comes to a bed, so Mishi Shifum be'or hadag. So, do you know when it's a finished product? It's a finished product only after you finish sanding off the boards. Back then, what they were used for sandpaper is the skin of fish. Which was scaly and rough. So they would basically use that as the old-fashioned sandpaper, and they would run that up and down against the wood, and that would finish off the wood. So the Mishnah in Kalim tells us that when it comes to the bedposts, so it's considered a bed, a finished product, only after I stand off the beams. V'imita misdareges agaba lamalishifa or hadag. So the Gemara says now, the Gemara over here asks a simple engineering question, and that is, if anyway, the ties of the bed are going to be going over the bedposts, so that means that really you're not going to be doing much in terms of handling the sides of the bedposts, because the rope is going to be going over the side of the bedpost, and so why is sanding off the bedposts considered such an important function of the making of the bed, if anyway the ropes are going to be going over that? Elahava hamigufan. So the Gemara therefore says, no, really I believe that in both cases, both in the regular bed of the weave, of the woven rope, and the special dargish bed, which is made out of the leather mat. In both of the cases, they are going to be tied and they're going to go through the bedpost. In other words, the holes are going to be drilled through the wood, and it's actually going to go through the bedpost. And the Gemara says, and I know that because the Mishnah Kalim describes how it's so important to sand off the sides, so it must be that the sides of the bed are going to be exposed. Fine. Hava hamigufan mita iule v'afuke bibizine dargish aule v'afuke be'afkata. Here, a picture is worth 1,000 words. Basically, what the Gemara describes is as follows: when it comes to the woven bed, so it's a weave, which means that the ropes are going to go back and forth, threaded throughout the holes on the side of the bed. And so there are, that is the fundamental difference between the mita and the dargish. The mita, the weave, is going to go through the bed, and when it comes to the dargish, on the other hand, in other words, all you're doing is securing each side of the mat to the post. So basically, you're going to be tying two of the ends through the hole and tying it over there, but it's not going to go all the way through from one end of the bed to the other end of the bed. That's the whole difference between the bed and the dargish. Let's just finish up, and then let's pause right now. So let's quickly review the entire discussion the Gemara just had. We now know in our Mishnah that a dargish is a special type of bed. It's a specialty bed. That for sure we know. If a person makes a neder against the mita, so according to our mayor, dargish is not included in his neder because it's such a specialty bed. The chachamim disagree. If he makes a neder against the bed, dargish is included in the neder. However, we all agree that if the neder is made against the dargish, which is a specialty bed, it doesn't include a regular bed because that's a general category, when meanwhile the dargish is a specialty bed. What's a dargish? Gemara spent a lot of time trying to defend Ula's position. The dargish is a bed of good luck, a bed that was left in the house, always kept clean, never used. We saw the rush earlier this morning in terms of describing why it should work that way. But meanwhile, the Gemara ends up rejecting Ula's explanation. The Gemara goes with a different explanation, that is, the dargish is a specialty bed. Unlike the regular bed, the standard bed, which is just a weave of ropes going back and forth, cross and lengthwise and crosswise throughout the four beams, the dargish, on the other hand, is a specialty bed that has a leather mat that is used instead of the ropes. And that is the Gemara's accepted pshat in terms of what the dargish is and what the specialty bed is. I don't know. Right? The Gemara did spend a lot of time defending Ula's pshat. It could be that there is such a thing, it's just not what the dargish is. Right? That could be. But I'm speculating and I'm unclear. Okay, Gemara just finishes off the discussion with a couple of halachas. Am Rav Yaakov Baruch, Am Rebbe, Mita Shenaklita Yotzin, Zokfa V'dayo. Let's say it's a canopy bed, all right? The Gemara over here, going back to the halachas of Moed Katan of Kfiya Samita, let's say it's a canopy bed. So, and not even four canopies, but two canopies, two poles, I should say. So basically, your canopy looks like a teepee. So in other words, here's your bed. You have one pole coming up the head and one pole coming up the feet. And now, God forbid, the person loses a relative and has to do Kfiya Samita. So to turn this and do a total 180 with this bed is just going to be physically impossible because you have two poles at both ends. It's just simply not going to stand on upside down. So what do you do? So that's exactly what the Gemara tells us. With such a bed, you don't have to turn it over 180. 90 degrees is going to be enough. So Zokfa V'dayo. You just simply turn it up, and that's enough. I'm Rav Yaakov Ra'idi, I'm Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Halacha Rav Shimon Gamliel. And the Gemara concludes that the Halacha follows like the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Okay. Okay, which was the position we saw earlier, that when it comes to the Dargash, all you need to do is untie the string, and that would be enough. You don't need to turn it over. Okay. Hanodim in the ear, let's finish up. We have one more Mishnah, one more piece of Gemara to do today. You make a neder against a particular city. That's it, I'm done with that city. I've had enough of that particular city. And you make a neder that you're not going to go back to that city ever again. So mutli kanos the tchuma, so you can go within the tchuma of the city. Okay, let's remind ourselves, we learned back in Erevin that every city has a tchum. And that means that on Shabbos and on Yontif as well, you are circumscribed within that tchum. You cannot go beyond the tchum of any particular city. Nowadays, this halacha is for us. It's not an outdated halacha. The halacha still applies, but the way our cities are constructed, the beginning of one city and the end of the other city, there's no gap, right? From here to Miami, right? The 50 miles from here to Miami. So I don't think there's any unoccupied. You can course a path. You can make a course where you're always going to be going through a populated city, but in the good old days, where you had a city and the city comes to an end and that's it. So 2,000 amas outside of the walls of the city, so that's considered the tchum. And we know the halacha is that you cannot walk on Shabbos or on Yontif beyond 2,000 amas. Right? We spent a lot of time talking in Masechta Shabbos and in Masechta Erevin, mostly in Masechta Erevin, that there is a way of trying to extend the amount that you could walk by making an Erev tchum. That's not our discussion for now. Anyway, you make a neder against the city, you can go within the tchum of the city. You can go within the 2,000 amas of the city. Va'arsali kanes le'ibur rab, but you cannot go within the ibur of a city. Okay? Every city has around it an ibur. Now, an ibur is not anything physical. It's a halachic reality. That around the city, 70 amos outside of a city, that's considered the ibur of the city. Okay, I guess an English word to describe it, it'd be like... Huh?
Extension.
It'd be like an easement, basically. Yeah. It'd be like an easement of the city. Now, what exactly does the ibur affect? What halacha does the ibur affect? So this part is not clear. Again, we're going back to Erevin, just reminding each other what we learned back in Erevin. This is a long time ago. Now in Daf Yomi terminology, but we learned back in Erevin that we know how long an ibur is. An ibur is just a short 70 amos and 2/3 immediately outside the city walls. But what does that mean exactly? So that is subject to a machlokas. The Gemara over there in Erevin, I forgot what daf it was on, but the Gemara in Erevin brings down a machlokas. That one opinion is that we start counting tchum not outside of the wall, but specifically outside the ibur. So in other words, the tchum count, which is 2,000 amos, does not begin when I walk immediately outside the wall, but rather I go 70 amos. I then hit the end of the easement of the city. Now the 2,000 amas begin. So the truth of the matter is, according to this opinion, you are given not 2,000 amas outside the city, but you're given 2,070 amas and 2/3 outside of a city.
Yeah, the discussions yesterday, right? Rambam and Rashi regarding
Right, correct, correct. Right, they, right. That's
which one is this one going back?
I don't remember. I don't remember. But yes, that's correct. That's an excellent connection. And the other opinion is that no, 2,000 amos of its chum begins immediately after you leave the city. Meaning, the moment you step outside the wall, you're 2,000 amos. You're on the count. What is this halacha of Ibor? The halacha of Ibor is a very specific halacha in that if I have two cities which are proximate to one another, and that the Ibor of one encroaches into the Ibor of the other, so then these two cities can be viewed as one unified city. Okay, so in other words, it's not a halacha of where Tchum begins and ends. It doesn't affect the halachas of Tchum whatsoever. It just happens to be a halacha that relates to when, under what circumstances, can two cities be viewed as one city. And if the easement of one city encroaches onto the easement of the other city, so then the two cities can be viewed as one. Okay, so that was a review of what the halachas of Ibor are. So again, we know the length of Ibor, 70 amos, but what does it mean halachically speaking, practically speaking? That's subject to a machlokas. So anyway, so hanodah b'na'ir mutar likanes l'tchum shel ir v'asur likanes l'iborah. So here, if I make a neder, I'm not going to go into a city. So to be within the tchum, that's fine. That's within the 2,000 amos, that's not a problem. That's not considered part of the city. But I can't be within the Ibor. Once I'm within the easement of the city, the Ibor of the city, so that's considered as being part of being within the city itself, and therefore that's a violation of my neder. The what if I make a neder about not being in somebody's house? So I can't be within the threshold and within the house. Meaning, to be directly outside the house, immediately outside the house, that's not a problem.
Chatzar is okay.
The chatzar would, seemingly, the chatzar would be fine. It's only being actually within the physical house. Okay, so, right, the what's that called nowadays when they tell you can't be within someone's property? right? Okay, you're with me, but also stuck. Yeah, right. No, okay, anyway, we'll think about it after. I'm sorry. All right, the Gemara's question is as follows. How do I know that the Ibor is considered part of a city? I'm Rav Yochanan Damakra. Look, when Yeshua was in Yericho, it says he was in Yericho. He was be Yericho. Now, we know that's not true. He wasn't in Yericho. That's the whole point. The whole point is he was outside the walls of the city, right? And they paraded around. Paraded. some parade. So they paraded around the city. Might be Yericho. Ilam be Yericho Mamish. You know they weren't in the city itself. Aksiv Yericho Sogeres Umisugeres. We know that it was surrounded by a wall. Elishmami Nabi Ibura. But that's exactly the point. They were immediately outside the wall of the city. They were within the Ibur of the city. And meanwhile, that's considered as being in the city. Thank you. faster for you than for me. For me, it would have taken much longer. So, Ema Afila B'Tchuma. So the Gemara says, it should be even the... So Shmami Nabi Yira, Ema Afila B'Tchuma. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the Tchum also is considered part of the city. So Haksi B'Tchuma, so the Gemara says, no. Because if you were listening yesterday's Parsha, yesterday's parsha admittedly was long, but if you were listening, Umadosem Michol Sa'ir, you measure outside the city, meaning Tchum by its very definition is considered outside the city. So therefore, Ibor is considered within the city, and Tchum is considered outside the city. So we know that the halacha is, the way the halacha views Tchum is that it's not a city extension, it just simply is an allowance for a person to walk. Once they're outside the city, you're allowed to walk up to Tchum. But that doesn't mean that's part of the city. Masha Enkin, on the other hand, when it comes to the Ibur of a city, the Ibur of the city is considered part of the city, even though you're outside the actual city walls. Certainly sounds from this discussion that the Ibur is the first way I described it, meaning that the Ibra is considered just an easement, it's considered really a city extension. It certainly sounds like from our Gemara that the Tchum should start counting after you left Ibor.
But again, you're going back to the biblical sources. This is not Lashon Benyamin.
Right. Very good. That's an excellent. Meaning that why the Gemara why the Gemara is using, right? It's one of those big questions throughout the Masechta. Meaning the Gemara always tries to use Tanakh, and then most of the time the Gemara ends up saying, yeah, but that's Tanakh, and we're following Lashon Bnei Adam. And meanwhile, over here, the Gemara does use Pesukim and Tanakh, and the Gemara accepts the Pesukim. So, right, it's one of those large issues which I'm not sure. And finally, to finish up, you make an eder against the house, so you can't be within the threshold. So the Gemara says it's not a problem to be immediately outside the threshold. So the Gemara says, okay. Once again, for a second time today, we're going to go to the halachas of tzaras of a house. We know what happens is the kohen goes in, kohen takes a look. Kohen is not going to render a decision until he leaves the house. The Torah describes v'yatzar kohen min habayis yachol yelech lebeis aviyaskir. Now, at what point should the kohen quarantine the house, meaning render the house to be a house of tzaras? So I might have thought it's a funny havamina. I might have thought the kohen should go all the way back to his house and close the door of this house. Now, what's happening with the kohen? Where's he living? He's living next door. He's living down the block. He's living cross town. It's a little bit strange then that he's going to be able to go all the way back home and able to close the door over here. Okay, so that's a little bit strange. But either way, so Tamalamar El Pesach Abayis. So Gemara says, okay, but we're not. Let's not enter. It's a question, but Gemara says no. He's got to be by the entrance of the house. El Pesach Abayis Yachol Yamod Tachas Hamashkof. I might have thought that he should be immediately under the lentil. B'yaskir Tamalamar Min Abayis Achi Eitz Min Abayis Kulo. So he's got to be outside the house. Akeitzat Omid B'tzad Hamashkof B'yaskir. So the Gemara says is that the correct positioning of the kohen before declaring the house to be a house of tzaras and quarantining the house is that he's going to stand immediately outside the lentil and then and only then close the door. The Gemara says, okay, that's l'chazchila. That's the best position the kohen should be in. But let's say he's all the way back home and somehow, some way he's able to close the door. Or let's say he's under the lentil and he closes the door. So b'di'evad, does it work? And the Gemara says, yes, it does. Tamar lomar, v'hizgir es sabayis mikol makom. The most important condition of the quarantining of the house is that the door is closed. As long as the door is closed, even though the kohen is not in the best position, which is immediately outside the lentil. So the Gemara is bothered because it sounds like when it comes to the tzaras of a house, that even though the kohen is not directly outside, he could be in his home, he could be even under the doorway, and still it's considered a satisfaction of a closing of the house. So the Gemara says, Shani Gabe Bayis Echsiv Min Abayis Achiyetz Min Abayis Kulo. So the Gemara says, okay, but that's not going to affect our halacha, because our halacha, what did the Noder say? He said, I'm making an eder min habayis, from the house, which means that in order for him not to violate his neder, so he has to actually physically be outside the house. On the other hand, the kohen, when it comes to him quarantining the house, so the Torah's description over there is not min habayis. So therefore, even though lechatzchila he can be right directly outside the house, but b'di'evit it would be sufficient even if he were under the lentil, underneath the lentil. Okay, two major topics. One was whether or not a second floor is considered part of the main component of the house. Machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Allah is like the Chachamim. The Aliyah is considered part of the house, but still it's considered a subsection of the house. Two, what is a dargish? The bed of good luck is Ula's explanation, but the Gemara ends up saying no. It's a specialty bed made up of a leather patch. But again, it's a specialty bed. You make a neder against the bed. It includes the dargish, but not the other way around. And finally, the last thing we discussed was making a neder against the city and against the house. So how far do you have to be outside the city? Right? How far is your restraining order? Thank you. How far is your restraining order? So for the city, you could be within Tchum, but you can't be within the Ibor. In terms of a house, the restraining order of your neder prohibits you from entering underneath the lentil.